Primary Reaction Chamber.
Where Copper Remindos on or
Time.
Initial reaction at T-minus 30.
Fuel slug in place.
Stand by for injection.
Capsule breach now.
Reaction commencing.
Containment field hold to 3.14 meters of tar. Initial dangers crossing to capacity.
Can we hold it?
What's happening?
Critical mass.
Hold on!
Mind spike!
Alright, welcome to Critical Mass. I'm your host, Winston Crutchfield. We've got a great conversation for you today with my brother David. He is there's some stuff going on in the current political climate that you need to know about and he needs to tell us about, but we'll get to all of that in just a minute. I want to take a break here and do a promo for one of my good friends over in the Christian New Media Group. I had these on a rotation cycle, and it's completely gotten away from me, so I'm probably going to pick one at random, and we'll see who we get, shall we?
Deep, deep down. Would you rather watch an Ed Wood movie than go to church? Deep, deep down. Do you feel you must choose between God or Godzilla? Deep, deep down, do you wish everything would stop so that you could read scripture while imitating Bela Lugosi?
God chose the weak things of the world to shame the strong. He chose the lowly things of this world and the despised things and the things that are not to nullify the things that are, so that no one may boast before him.
Do not fret, my friend, for you may go to church and hear a sermon about Ed Wood, and you may have both God and Godzilla on the Excuse Me, Ghidorah podcast, found on iTunes and at linthatcher.podbean.com. That's Excuse Me, Ghidorah at linthatcher.podbean.com.
There you have it, Lint Hatcher, folks. Excuse Me, Ghidorah podcast. Great stuff, deep thinker. I love his show. Go check him out. He's got a nice log there of back shows for you to get into and go all the way back and listen to Apocalypse on Aisle 4. Download the printout of his seminar there if you can't find the audio. It's great stuff. Also, I want to take a minute here. John Wilkerson is podcasting for water all summer long, and we're pledged to help him. Remember, that's to benefit Living Water International, to provide water to third world countries and people who need good, clean water. You can check that some more information out at water.jesusgeek.info. podcast that's, again, that's Living Waters International, and you can donate through the Facebook cause, through John Wilkerson's Facebook cause. Also, I'm looking for writers to publish an anthology to benefit Living Waters International. I'm looking for short stories, no longer than 10,000 words, maybe up to 15,000 if you're a compelling writer, or you know, have a real passion about what you're writing about. But any length is fine. It would be accepted. I'm actually paying money for stories more than 5,000 words in length, but I would be happy to publish anything below that. All contributors will receive a copy of the anthology and credit, of course. The payment is nominal. You can check that out at the submissions info page at Critical Press Media. It's a nominal payment because all proceeds from this are going to benefit the charity. I am looking for this. This anthology is going to be strongly themed around, of course, water. The title of the anthology is going to be The Well of Life. And I'm looking for stories where water plays a significant thematic role in the story. Either it acts as something of the something of a MacGuffin for the characters, or perhaps water is an important part of your hero's life or your villain's life in some way or another. Or, you know, maybe you've got a African shaman calling down rain in a blighted country, or, you know, calling down drought in the middle of the flood. Who knows? Maybe you're looking to write Waterworld. But no Waterworld, no fanfic. Waterworld settings are fine, no fanfic. So check out the submission info over at criticalpressmedia.com. And if you have some great ideas, put them on paper. I would love to help you whip those into publication shape, get you a publishing credit, and hopefully we'll all raise enough money to dig a well for somebody before the end of the year. Enough of that. You're waiting for the interview. I'm in the reaction chamber with my brother, David Crutchfield. And Dave, we are on about as we're recording this, we're on about a hot-breaking news topic, which it seems like the media is overlooking. And we're going to go, maybe we'll speak a little bit about why that is, although I usually leave that to the experts in the field. And by that, I mean Derek and Sharon Gilbert, who are podcasting over at PIDradio.com. Again, a great show. They're better informed than I am going to be on these issues. But you know what? I've got David in my studio, and I don't have Derek and Sharon in my studio. And you know what? Somebody is sabotaging our attempts to hook up on Skype. So if you know who that is, anyway. But we're gonna get on that here. You know what? Why don't I just go ahead and let you introduce yourself, David? Say hi to the folks in the pod world.
Howdy, everybody. My name is David Crutchfield. I'm his brother. And the news story that we're gonna be talking about is what's happening currently in a small nation in Honduras called Honduras, located in Central America, just south of the Gulf. You would think it's not really that big or that important a nation, but seeing as how the U.S. runs counter-drug and counter-arms importation operations out of this base, what affects that nation politically also affects our homeland security.
All right, so the arms and drug defense running out, and you're talking about specifically military bases there?
Yes, military bases. We operate out of a Honduran base currently as a joint operation with them.
Now, is the military is running these defensive operations. What else are they doing?
Well, the U.S. military also supports Honduras and the other Central American countries in the region when such disasters as hurricanes or earthquakes attack and just cause massive devastation. We provide necessary transport and medevac to the entire Central and South American parts of the world.
Okay, so basic humanitarian efforts as well as... it's not, you know, our presence there isn't just focused on, you know, keeping America safe. It's also a benefit to their country. And I'm sure a shot to their economy.
Oh, absolutely. Anytime you have U.S. military personnel in a third world country, the amount of money going into the country increases dramatically. We hire locals to work most of the positions that we don't have military personnel to support, and all that money goes directly into their economy and just bolsters it greatly.
Okay. Now, we probably ought to take a minute here and go ahead and lay some qualifications out. David, you are better known as Sergeant Crutchfield, yes?
Yes.
Okay. And tell us, you're in the Army, U.S. Army.
Right.
And you have, most of this is not secondhand information for you.
No, I was stationed in Honduras for a full year assisting with these operations.
Okay. And don't worry, folks, none of this is classified information. The men in black aren't going to come knocking on your door. Well, not over this anyway. But hey, keep listening. You never know. So that you spent a year over in Honduras assisting with these operations and seeing what went on firsthand. And something else happened in Honduras that pertains to this situation.
Well, something a little bit more personal to me, that is. I found my wife and wound up getting married to a Honduran girl there.
Lovely young lady, Mavis, and we love her to death. And now you have a brand new baby boy, Michael David Crutchfield, and we're all happy about that too. Now, this is important because Mavi's family, of course, still lives in Honduras. You brought her here, and this is where we get the tip off for the current situation. Yes,
yeah, that's correct.
What happened there?
Well, basically, as sitting over here visiting my brother, I got a phone call from my wife, and she was frantic. She was telling me that Honduras is being occupied by the Venezuelan military, and that they're wanting to get rid of the current Honduran president, and put the Venezuelan president as president of Honduras as well.
Okay, now we should probably mention Mavis is in Florida with our parents, and you're getting ready to go on active duty, or what? I guess you're always on active duty.
Right, I'm currently on active duty. I'm just getting ready to go to Afghanistan at this time.
Okay, and by the time this show drops, you will likely be in the air somewhere?
Somewhere in the air.
Hopefully somewhere in the air instead of, you know, still on the ground waiting.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And, you know, since she's in Florida, she's not in Honduras, how does she get this information?
Well, being a nice guy, I try to hook her up with as many Spanish channels as I can. But one of the Spanish channels happens to be a Honduran channel from Honduras.
Funny as it is, folks, not everybody in the world speaks English. That was kind of a blow to me too. But I don't know. It was really kind of most staggering to send my brother off to a foreign country and him come back speaking a foreign language. So that was something else. But I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That was actually something else for me too. I never expected to learn Spanish. But at any rate,
things we do for women.
At any rate, I got her this Spanish channel, which actually broadcasts out of Honduras. And so she's been watching the local news, and that's how she gets that, and along with talking to her mother on the phone.
Yeah, don't tell me those bills don't add up.
A little bit.
Yeah. Okay, so can you tell us a little bit about the, I don't know if current's the right word anymore, but the former political situation in Honduras, the former setup of the Honduran government, because it's not a two-party, three-tier checks and balance system the way we have, is it?
And not exactly. It is a straight democracy. It's not a democratic republic. the president is elected by popular vote and not by an electoral college the way ours is. Another noted change is that while we allow two terms in office for the president, they only allow one. Well, the current president does not exactly like that. That is part of what spurred this entire thing on. But he's also been working with the other local Central American nations concerning the political situation in Honduras.
Just so we can put a little more concrete date stamp on this, you have his name?
Which one?
The current president of Honduras.
I can't actually pronounce his name.
Well, give it a shot. Okay, there we go. Quick trip to the online archives, and we have the president of Honduras.
The current president's name is Manuel Zelaya.
Okay.
I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Well, that's good enough for government work.
And since I work for the government, that must be good enough.
Must be good enough. And he has been in office how long now?
I'm not sure about that one.
I haven't got
that information.
Oh, that's all right. Now, he doesn't rule the country directly.
No, he does have a Congress set up to basically make laws the same way that ours does. And up until just recently, he did not have direct control over the Honduran military. The Congress did. He had some control, but not quite as much as ours.
Okay. And what happened? So it was, they have a... So it is kind of similar to ours in where they have a legislative branch in the Congress, and they have an executive branch. Is that his function?
That is his function. He's got the executive branch. They also do have a judicial branch, although it is also considerably limited compared to ours.
Okay, but it's not part of the federal government. The judicial branch doesn't have control over, it doesn't have a check and balance over the Congress or the President, does it?
No, not over the Congress or the President. The Congress has the check and balance over everything.
Okay.
They use the judicial branch as a judge to see what's right and what's wrong as compared to the current law. It's almost advisory.
Okay, and the congressmen are elected by region in Honduras?
As I understand, they are elected by popular vote.
By popular vote for the entire country?
Yes. It's not big enough to have various regions.
Okay. So what has happened to change all this? The president now has command of the military?
Well, the president actually fired the Army Chief of Staff because the Army Chief of Staff would not support his decision. Now, where this started was...
Which decision was that?
I was just getting there.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
The current president is wanting to rewrite the nation's constitution, changing it from a democratic nation to a socialist nation. Now, the news sources say that the new constitution that the president wants to instate was actually written in Venezuela. The judicial branch has declared that the ballots that he's wanting to put out, the referendum that he's wanting to do to change the constitution, is illegal, that he's not allowed to do this. And the Congress supports that decision. The military supported that decision, and so he fired the Joint Chief of Staff for the Army.
Okay, so how does that... That puts him directly in control of the Army?
It puts him directly in control of the Army because he put his personal security chief in command of the Army in that position.
I see.
So, while the... Congress ordered all the ballots and all the material to be turned over to the prosecutors. The ballots and everything is actually in possession of the Honduran military, and it's delivered to Honduras by the Venezuelan Air Force, which landed just about a day ago in Tocantin, the capital of Honduras.
All right, well, this sounds like a fairly effective coup d'etat where the Honduran president is essentially assuming the responsibilities of the other branches of the government. And he's doing this with the backing of the Venezuelan government, a man that we know and recognize, Hugo Chavez.
Yes,
that's... Is that what's going on?
That does appear to be what's going on.
Okay, and this would take the Honduran government from a... Not a... what did you call it? A constitutional democracy.
Constitutional democracy.
To... from a constitutional democracy to a...
Socialist state.
A socialist state. Okay, now what are the... We've talked about how he's doing this by kicking out the military leader and replacing him with his own. What is the instigation for wanting to move to a communist system? Not necessarily Honduras, but it sounds like the real mover behind this is Zelaya. What does he have to gain from the move to a communist state?
To be honest, I'm not sure what he has to gain from the move to a communist state, but I do know this. Nobody in the nation of Honduras has been happy with its current state of affairs. It may be that he just thinks this is a better form of government. It may be that he thinks he can retain power, because he's been in office for a few years now already. But I can't say what is the actual cause of this.
Okay. Now, it sounds like this is... Venezuela is involved real heavily in this also. You know what? Can you tell us what's going on there?
Venezuela is involved heavily in this. In fact, the actual new constitution that is wanting to instate was supposedly written in Venezuela. But more to the point, the ballots that he's wanting to put out, the referendum, it's actually all the material is coming from Venezuela. It arrived in Tocantin, escorted by the Venezuelan Air Force, handed directly over to the Honduran Army after he fired the Joint Chief of Staff for the Honduran Army. So Venezuela is heavily involved in this, and according to the local news that my wife was watching, the Venezuelan army is actually occupying Honduras even as we speak. Supposedly there to just observe.
To put that in perspective, that would be like Canadian troops descending on Michigan to make sure that the elections are going correctly and without incident. Or United Nations troops, blue hats, descending on New York or Washington, D.C., to make sure that to enforce presidential orders.
That's correct. The only difference here, the Supreme Court in Honduras and the Congress in Honduras has mandated that this election, this ballot, is illegal.
And since the ballots and the voting process originates with the legislative arm of the government, in this case the Congress, you know, they are really the ones who are in a position to say what process is legal and what process is not.
That's correct.
All right. Now, this is really, really interesting. Because you're talking about bringing in ballot materials and voting materials and putting the change of government in the hands of the people as determined by popular vote, the way everything else in Honduras is done, yes?
That's correct. But the way most everything else in Honduras is done, with the corruption that's been in the system, the popular vote is not truly taken into account. It's just the people with money who's actually paying for it. In this case, Venezuela.
Okay. So I find it very curious then that Venezuela is bringing all of this stuff in if they really expect if they're the ones in control of the voting block to begin with, and they're the ones in control of all the voting material, then once the so-called votes are cast, and Venezuela is the one in charge of counting the votes, well then of course a socialist government is going to come in. And Hugo Chavez is going to annex Honduras to all intents and purposes. Now, this also sounds to me like Zelaya is out of office. I mean, if this little coup succeeds, then and Zelaya gets the change in government that he wants, then he is out of office, and Hugo Chavez is in. And if the coup fails, and you know these ballots come back, and you know we find out that the people don't want to go to this socialist state, well, by gum, I guarantee they're not going to let a socialist stay in office. So this really sounds like a suicide move for Zelaya, any way you cut it.
It basically is. I can't say that Venezuela is actually counting the votes. I do know that they are overseeing the process, though. Rumor in Honduras, as per my wife's family, my in-laws, is that by the end of tomorrow, Hugo Chavez is president of Honduras either way. So, Zelaya, he's out of office. The Congress has already initiated impeachment actions against him.
That's interesting. Sounds to me like he's grabbing to retain some form of political power. So that even if he goes out of office, by doing it this way and giving Chavez some resemblance of legality for his assumption of control of the company. Is that the way you read it?
That's actually another one of the rumors that's going around in Honduras, even as we speak.
Okay. Now, Honduras is a long way away, in spite of the fact that they're on the same time zone we are.
They are not. They're actually in the mountain time zone.
Oh, well, my mistake. That's still a long way away. Is there anything... Well, before we get to the, is there anything we can do, because I think that's a valid question. Perhaps first we need to ask, is there anything we should, you know... Should we be doing anything? But before we get, you can even ask that question. How is this going to happen? It sounds like it is going to happen, or probably by the time this podcast hits, it will have already happened. How is this going to affect the U.S. presence in Honduras and U.S. foreign policy?
Well, assuming the coup d'état does happen as planned, U.S. presence will be removed entirely from Honduras. The Venezuelan president has already ordered the Honduran president to get rid of, to shut down and remove all U.S. businesses, all U.S. imports, all U.S. military, including the U.S. embassy from Honduras. Now, that has not been set into motion, as I understand, but we will have no presence in Honduras, and the socialist and communistic regime will gain power in Central America, and our southern border will be left basically unprotected.
Now, surely, you know, they've gotten the memo, communism's dead, right?
Apparently not, because China still makes annual visits to Honduras, is greeted warmly, and treated as a VIP.
Well, this isn't the Cold War.
It's a Cold War in many aspects. We still fight communism today, behind the lines.
Tell me about that.
All right, now, as far as communist activity in Central America is concerned, primarily it's coming from both Venezuela and Cuba. They seem
so
to
we're talking about Castro and Chavez.
No longer Castro, at least not directly, but yes. And what they're doing is they're trying to unite the Central American countries, especially the Southern Central American countries, underneath a communistic rule, which basically would make them a threat to the U.S., to the democracy in the U.S. It gives them easy access to our nation. If you think the Cuban Missile Crisis was bad back then, wait until they can get missiles to a communist nation in areas that we can't watch.
Okay, now, you are talking Generation Y, recall, and that's different from Generation X. Generation X was wondering what just happened, and Generation Y is wondering, why do we care? You're talking to a generation of people who don't remember the Cold War of the 50s, or even in the 80s that we grew up with, the communist presence, and, you know, Gorbachev and
the Gorbachev Reagan era, and even before our lifetime, the Cuban Missile Crisis in the 60s. You say that today, you're going to get a response from our parents' generation and from generations before that, but not really so much from ours and from the generations after us. Tell us what the music, what the Cuban music crisis.
Hi. Basically.
The Cuban music crisis, for the record, that would be the Macarena. But what was the Cuban Missile Crisis, and why is that important?
Basically, it's when missiles were put in Cuba that were long enough to actually reach the United States soil, being able to, for the communist government, the Cuban communist government under Castro, also in joint with China, being able to reach the U.S. with nuclear warheads.
And if that sounds scary to today's terrorist concerned people, then yeah, that's pretty darn scary. For reference, a missile base in Cuba, and what happened was that JFK, you hear those songs, the Cuban Missile Crisis and the Bay of Pigs and all this stuff. John F. Kennedy wanted to prevent this from happening and ran a blockade around Cuba to prevent this from happening. And it was probably the closest our world has ever come to global thermonuclear war. And we're all praying that this doesn't happen again. Well, the same people who were in power then are still in power now. People like Fidel Castro and the people that have taken up his mantle. And you know what? While the threat of terrorism is focused on the Middle East, these people who are dedicated to a communist ideal don't see American ideology as anything other than threatening. All right, and especially when America is still in a position to come in and literally impose their will through military action on other countries.
That's exactly right. So they take our very existence as a threat.
All right. Keeping our borders clear isn't just defending against the Red Scare or the communist threat, or preventing them from launching nukes, at the heartland. And make no mistake, a base as close as Cuba or as close as Honduras or as Venezuela could certainly be a staging point for a nuclear event. This is not very different from the threat that suitcase nukes pose now. I mean, anybody, let's face it, an organization that is determined to infiltrate the U.S. and set off a nuclear device is going to find a way to do it. Bad people who are determined to do bad things will find a way to do them.
Exactly.
Okay, but where a crisis can be prevented, where a little bit of foresight can at least let people know that we're watching, shouldn't we be doing something about this? Why isn't, before we even say why, but the U.S. is not getting involved in this, are they?
The Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, has gone down and had a conference with the president of Honduras and the president of Venezuela. What was contained in that conference, I haven't looked up yet. But we have some involvement, but not a great deal, unfortunately.
Okay. Well, with a matter of, I mean, this is a matter of national security, of homeland security. Honduras is close. It's close enough for airborne strikes. It's not really close enough to be a staging point for smuggling, is it?
Actually, Honduras is close enough to be a staging point for smuggling.
Do tell.
It's sitting right there on the Gulf, just south of the United States. You go north a little ways, and you can't get out of the Americas. You are going to hit land somewhere. And so it wouldn't take but a matter of hours for any vessel to get from Honduras to the U.S.
To the U.S., through the Gulf of Mexico.
Through the Gulf of Mexico.
Along the coast of Florida.
Not necessarily even along the coast of Florida, but all the way up even into Louisiana.
And okay, Gulf of Mexico, Louisiana, can they get to the coast of Florida?
Oh, easily.
And that puts them in range of the Everglades and coming in through that marsh and swamp area.
Right.
Also the Virgin Islands, Puerto Rico, all within, you know, within boating distance of Honduras. All right. So that puts a Honduras with a hostile government,
within striking distance of the U.S.
Within swimming distance.
Practically. Cuba's close, but we can keep an eye on Cuba. Because it's an island. But Honduras is totally landlocked. It's easy to get equipment, men, anything from South America up into Honduras. And it should be noted that the Brazilian government is not exactly friendly either.
So in addition to keeping, you know, in addition to keeping communist presence out of this nation, its placement allows us to prevent flow of contraband from South American states into Central America, into Mexico, and from there into the U.S.
It actually gives us a very good position there, because from Honduras, we have reach in anywhere in the Central and South American region as far as both monitoring and prevention of narcotic and illegal arms movement.
So having a base there is a great benefit to us. Losing it could be a great detriment to us, because we will lose, I mean, if you install a government in that area that is interested in making sure that bad things happen to America, whether that's arms or drugs or
invasion.
Well, I don't think we're in any danger of invasion yet. But removing us from there just takes the loop off the belt and just allows these things to flood up out of the countries that don't want them and into another country that doesn't want them.
That's exactly right.
It's going to make the Mexican-American border a bigger nightmare, isn't it?
A much bigger nightmare, because Honduras is one of the primary nations that people go through to go to Mexico when they're coming from further south.
So this is an important station for the U.S. to maintain.
Yes.
And the U.S. does not appear to be getting involved in what looks like a revolution or a coup d'etat within the government, and that just seems that seems very, very odd. I mean, there's a number of things about the Obama administration that seem very, very odd, but most of them have to do with the president's handling of diplomatic affairs, like his faux pas with the Middle Eastern ruler Crump, where he bowed to the Middle Eastern ruler, you know, the sign of submission to the Middle East, you know, where he insulted the British ambassador and the crown. And so we can chalk this up to a number of things about President Obama's administration that seem very, very odd.
Well, I'll give you another little odd thing. The Department of State website concerning the travel to and from Honduras warns simply of demonstrations scheduled for tomorrow. They don't make mention of the Venezuela military presence at all. While the Air Force is currently in Tegucigalpa, the capital of Honduras, in Tocantin, which is the main international airport there in Honduras, and the actual army itself is throughout the different cities.
Hmm. Well, this sounds like it may be yet another situation where people are trying to do things and they don't really want you to know about it. And the media is not covering it because it's not big, juicy celebrity gossip. I mean, holy smokes, Michael Jackson died this week.
Yeah, no kidding. Unfortunately,
poor Farrah Fawcett. She got 2 hours worth of media coverage before Michael Jackson died. How rude of him.
Big media news coverage by the American stations don't seem to have any mention of this at all. You have to find international news sources in order to get information on this at all, and even that's hard to find.
So having established this is important, and if we could do something, if something should be done, what can we do? I mean, is this something that the average American citizen can get involved on?
Average American citizen can't get involved in a way that would affect the actions of tomorrow.
Well, we're not going to pick up a gun and go storm the country, but...
You know, what we can do is put political pressure on our senators and on our representatives to actually make Honduras important again in the United States of America.
And you're not just saying this because, you know, your wife wants to go see the family again.
No, not particularly. I'm saying this because I believe in the mission that we have down there in Honduras. I believe in its importance to the security of our nation.
You know, you don't, people think that the big crisis right now is in Iraq and is in Afghanistan and is in all these foreign places that seem like they're so far away where there's a lot of shooting going on. But, you know what? It's little presences like this that, allow the U.S. to keep, to keep their eye on the global situation to remain a global power. I'm reminded of the decline of the British Empire, because something very similar happened to the British Empire. I mean, at one time, at the turn of the 19th, 20th century, the British Empire was the one on which the sun never set. And very quickly, things like this started happening, and British presence was removed from around the globe, and now Britain is no longer the global superpower that it once was. I see very much the same thing happening to America. Now, there's a school of thought that says that's okay, that we should reinstitute the Monroe Doctrine and go back to being an isolationist nation, but as I look at the world and watch the world shrink, I think that being less and less of a realistic possibility, or even a desirable thing.
It is definitely not a possibility. The way communications and transportation and even the import and export of goods has become nowadays, it's just not possible to be isolated any longer.
So we have to, not only do we have to keep an eye on our neighbors, but we have to keep an eye on our neighbors like Honduras. And Honduras is not the only place where something like this is happening, but it's the one where it's happening right now.
That's right. Before Honduras, it actually has been happening in Brazil for a while. It's been a slower process in Brazil, but it's happening there as well. It's little things that make all the difference. We can watch Iraq, we can watch Afghanistan in the news, but our threats are not isolated to those two nations. Our threats are worldwide.
All right. Well, one more time, the way for the average American citizen to get involved, primarily write to your representatives. Write to your congressman, write to your senator. I'll put a link in the show notes to a very helpful website where you can find not only the name of your governmental representatives, but also how to write to them. And how to make things like this known. Follow the news, follow these events, and we're going to put a couple of links to some news stories that service this area, so that that'll help. And you know, beyond that, one of the commandments that we are given in the Bible is pray for king and country. I know that the Gilberts are fond of calling up the incident where Satan offers Jesus, control of the nations of the government, and Jesus does not correct him. And that's fine, I understand that. But it also, the Bible also says that governmental authority is established by God, and that he controls the hearts of its rulers. He also commands us to pray for our government, something that, that I know the Gilberts believe also. So pray for President Obama's administration and the direction of our country. couple your prayer with affirmative action and write to your representatives, ask them what's going on, ask them if they know what's going on, and tell them that you feel strongly about this. And we will, I will, and you know what, in addition to some links to get that out there, I will go ahead and attach a, I will post a form letter on the website, into the blog. And I'm actually going to wait a day or so after this podcast drops before I post the form letter into the blog just to avoid cluttering up the feed. But, that, you know, take a copy of the form letter, print that out, sign it, and mail it in. Email campaigns are fine too. Cut and paste this letter into your own email and forward that on. Let your nation know what you think of this and where you think this could be headed. Anyway, there's your call to action for the call to action for the week. We will continue to keep an eye on the situation in Venezuela and in Honduras, and I'll provide updates there as I see the need for them. Probably no more hour-long interviews, but you know, blog updates as they come by. But in the meantime, take a look at the situation around you. Remember that politics and government, like bettering the environment, is one where you think globally and act locally. Start by putting the people in power that you need to be in power. And I'm very depressed this last year that the Snarky Avenger did not get elected to president. I think the world would have been better if he had. But you know what, Snarky, we'll try again in 4 years. Yes? Meantime, keep your reaction chamber firing. David, thank you so much for you know, sitting with me in front of my microphone and being patient with me like this. And if I haven't said so before, thank you for your service to our country.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to do this.
Do you want to say hi, Mom, or anything?
Say hello.
All right. I don't even think Mom listens to the podcast, do you?
I have no idea. I think she does.
Does she? Well, yes. In that case, we're both in trouble. All right. Good night, folks. Keep the rad chambers going. Think about the impact that the world has on our country and on you, and get out and do something about it, yes?
Email at mindspike@criticalpressmedia.com.